This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us today at WNRN. A little bluegrass coming up pretty soon. A little Les Temps Perdue. But in between, a little homelessness. How do you do that? How do you teach that? How do you learn about that? How do you discuss that? Only here on WNRN. With today's guests, we have Stephen Hitchcock. He is the director and the chaplain at The Haven here in Charlottesville. Good morning.
Morning.
And we also have Jordy Yeager. He's a journalist, wrote an article that many people read, a fascinating piece called The Median Man for Siva Weekly. Good morning. Now, I didn't like that at all. Try one more time.
Good morning.
Let me ask you to come over here and use this microphone. You know, it's weird because this morning when we were setting things up, that was the microphone that worked, and we swapped cables. But here comes Melissa Goode running to the rescue. So Jordy Yeager here. And I promise, he is here no matter what you thought.
Hello, hello.
See?
Can you hear me better?
I promise. Jordy Yeager here. Although we moved him away from...
I can see Jordy.
He exists.
Over in the distance now, closer to me, away from Stephen. So we are going to talk about homelessness, but one of the things, when I read the article about the Median Man, which was about the gentleman and one woman who stand in some of the medians here in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, panhandling... One of the first thoughts that came to my mind was, how does that affect what The Haven is trying to do? So we're going to blend that into part of the conversation today. Were you, Jordy, were you embedded in that sort of the word that they use, when journalists go out to Afghanistan or in? Did you live with these folks for a while, or did you just interview them?
I did not live with them. I stopped by over the course of about 9 months, almost every other week or so. And there would be periods where I would come back and spend whole entire days with them. I would spend up to 12, 13 hours with them sometimes. But they offered to have me come live with them. But throughout the course of our interviews, it never really resulted. And I visited their camp with them, but I did not embed with them in the official military term.
And so I just found that to be such a fascinating conversation about your writing with them and then what The Haven does. A quick sort of mission statement about The Haven, if you would, Stephen.
Sure.
Stephen Hitchcock, the director and the chaplain for The Haven.
Sure. So The Haven is located in downtown Charlottesville, and it's a day shelter and multi-resource center. So it's a place where folks who are in crisis, in extreme poverty, experiencing homelessness, can come during the day and receive basic human resources like storage, physical mailing address, breakfast, showers, laundry, computer and phone access, just a place to be out of the elements. And then it's also a context for service providers who work with this demographic to come and engage with their clients. And then beyond that, I mean, increasingly, it's like the front door, the formal front door to the system of care. So if there's a referral to housing options and housing subsidies, often it happens there at The Haven.
So, Jordy, You're interviewing the Median Man, and I guess we'll continue to call that, although there was one woman there.
Sure.
Because that was the title of the article. You're there for 9 months. What chose you to do that article?
I grew up here, and growing up, we didn't have a whole lot of folks panhandling. You would occasionally see one or two on downtown mall or even the corner, maybe on a median or on a sidewalk along 29, but nowhere as near as popular as they are today. And so when I would come back home over the years, I moved away for a while, and I would see them increasingly on the roads, I would ask folks about them, about where they came from, why they were there, and nobody really had a concrete answer. And so just kind of being a curious fellow, I decided to go out and start asking them some questions about where they came from, what their story was, how much they make, what are the rules, what are the taboos, you know, what all of the things that we wonder as we stop and sit there at the stoplights about what makes them do what they do. And so that's where the impetus came from, and I pitched the idea to Seville Weekly, and they liked that. And so we just started going out there, and I decided that I wanted to, it was more kind of maybe a procrastinator's tendency to just go out there and spend as much time and then kind of put off the writing of it. And Courtney over at Seville put the fire under my feet, and I eventually started writing on it, and we got what we did.
So Jordy sees more people out in the medians. Is that because there are more homeless? The number, the percentage of people who are homeless is increasing, Stephen?
That's not been our experience in terms of like the census data work and the day-to-day in terms of how many people we see coming through the Haven or a place like Pochum, the thermal winter shelter, emergency shelter. But certainly the number of panhandlers, and I think what you're touching upon, Rick, is whether or not those two demographics are conflated. Someone who's flying a sign, which is the now preferred nomenclature to panhandling, someone who's flying a sign, are they actually homeless? Some are and some are not. But it's important, I think, to differentiate or at least think about how, while this is perhaps the most public face for people about homelessness, it's often not the truest face of who is homeless in our city.
What is the face? We're talking about the numbers and whether the numbers, the percentage, the increased percentage of people who are panhandling and flying a sign is increased versus does that represent the percentage of people who are truly homeless? Are the faces the same? Because Jordy is, his article is about seven men, is that right, and one woman?
Right, yeah, I talk with about five folks, so four men and one woman. By and large, I talked to, over the course of the article, about, I would say, anywhere about 15 to 18 people. And this was a small group that is most visible there and people tend to recognize, but also one that sticks together. And so the other folks either stick in ones and twos, groups of ones and twos, or they stick on their own and are more transient. Some in February that I talked to wouldn't be there in March. And so there is that transient population to them as well. But the group that I really got into, almost embedded with, as you said, was a group of five folks. And I think Stephen's exactly right. That is, the by and large, the face that's most visible of homelessness. But that doesn't necessarily signify all of the aspects to homelessness, or even really kind of scratch the surface in some cases.
But did you say that, Stephen? Because that's my question. Is that the face of, or I guess it is the face of homelessness, but is that actually the group that is homeless?
Sure, it's one face. I mean, the homeless demographic is a spectrum, and you have people who are just in and out, just touched down briefly in the homeless system of care, and then all they needed was just a little nudge and they're fine. And then you have folks who are more chronically homeless, which is the language that we often use. And several of the folks that Jordy interviewed would fall into that category of chronically homeless. But I said that just because most people, I guess our inherited view of homelessness is a kind of chronic homelessness. So maybe a bearded, middle-aged, older middle-aged man who people think might have substance use or mental health issues. But the fastest growing subpopulations among the homeless nationally are families and youth, unaccompanied youth. So that's like 16 to 24, which is wildly different than what most people think of when they think of the homeless.
The bearded man is what's on the cover of the Siva Weekly with the Median Men article.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And actually, one of the people that didn't make it into the article, but that I spoke with at some length, was his son, Robert. And his son is in that 20-year-old age range. And I did come across a number of folks in that 18 to late 20s age range as well, but they were the ones that that were more trying to find work every single day. They weren't going to be in the same place. Whereas the folks that I talked to had more or less not necessarily set down roots, but they had their camp nearby. They had set up their homeless shelter of their own and took advantage of that, and so they panhandle or flew signs nearby.
Roots of a different version.
Exactly. They made their own family. They made their own network. They set down their own roots in the way that they could.
13 minutes after the hour, we're talking about homelessness on a broad spectrum. Stephen Hitchcock here. He's the director and chaplain at The Haven here in Charlottesville. Jordy Yeager's here as well. His article, The Median Man, appeared recently in Siva Weekly, talking about flying a sign or panhandling and the new method of how that works, sort of talking about how they go together and does one hurt the other. We'll be right back.
Our members are joined by the following underwriters in their support of WNRN.
The Markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
Seminole Square, home of Crystal Cleaners and Ace Shoe Repair. Crystal Cleaners offers dry cleaning and tailoring services. Right next door, Ace Shoe Repair is Charlottesville's shoe, boot, and leather goods repair center. You can find Crystal Cleaners and Ace Shoe Repair in Seminole Square Shopping Center or sevilleshop.com/Seminole Square.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here we are back at WNRN. A beautiful Sunday. But not everybody is at home enjoying that Sunday or in their car enjoying that Sunday. Stephen Hitchcock, Jordy Yeager here with us talking about homelessness. Stephen Hitchcock, director and chaplain at The Haven, downtown Charlottesville. You mentioned, Stephen, that is it's a daytime facility, correct? Why
That's
not
right.
at night? Tell us what the services are.
Sure.
I'm always surprised, and I think people view, you can get a meal and then get a place to sleep. But that's not necessarily true at all facilities. So tell us what The Haven does.
Sure. So as I mentioned, it's a day shelter. So we offer services during the day, and they're just meeting very practical needs. So you can get breakfast there. You can store your belongings. You can get your physical mail sent there. You can do laundry. You can take showers. You can get out of the elements. You have computer and phone access as well. So it's meeting those basic needs. And then the overnight shelter, so the emergency last resort shelter in our community, is called Pacham. And it partners with congregations, mostly churches, the synagogue, Tandem Friends. But that's the overnight winter shelter. So it's from roughly from Halloween to April Fool's. And so at 5:30, men and women are outside the Haven and then go through intake at Pochum, and they go to their respective sites. So that's the overnight shelter. The Salvation Army is also a year-round shelter. It's but it has different stipulations to Pochum.
But why doesn't the Haven have overnight facilities?
That's a great question, and it's an important one, because really there's been a sea change over the last decade in terms of how we address homelessness, and it's a shift away from shelter-based intervention to housing-focused solutions. And so we'll always need shelter, because I believe people are always going to be – the next person is going to be walking through the door. But the shift comes by answering the question, why are people homeless? With the answer, because they don't have a home. It's a housing crisis. And so you want to keep that crisis acute. You don't want to habituate someone to the crisis. So we try to get people in and through our program really quickly and into stable, safe housing. Or, on the front end, prevent them from ever entering our system of care. So they don't need to go through the trauma of homelessness, and so it's a shift. So the Haven does basic resources, but we also try to assess people's needs and their barriers to housing, and then solve that housing crisis.
And funding, is this a Charlottesville funded? Do I personally write a check to the Haven?
I would personally like you to write a check to the Haven, Rick. it's a mix. So we receive both public and private dollars. The majority is private funding, but increasingly we have taken federal, state, and even city funding.
We'll make sure before you leave today, we'll give Melissa, because we will podcast the show, and we'll put we'll click to the Haven's website, so people
Great.
Who want to write a check. My checkbook is home by my computer, which will allow me to go to the podcast so I can click on the website and put one out there.
Nice.
So we'll allow that available for others who are in the same situation that I'm in. And now, Jordy, you went to find those who are flying a sign. And one of the first paragraphs that you wrote included a handful of questions. What do they do with the money? Are they drug addicts? How much do they make? Why don't they get a job? Are they violent? If given a chance, would they rob me? Are they part of an organized panhandling ring? People who actually have homes, but who choose to make a living off the public's generosity. So let's talk about some of those questions. Because, again, one of the first things that came to my mind when I'm reading this article is, and you get to it, people who actually have homes but are living off the public's generosity. When you pull up to those medians here in Charlottesville, and we WNRN listeners are in Richmond, we're in Lynchburg and Harrisonburg, etc. But if you, wherever you are living, if you can envision some of your major street medians, that's where these folks are. And when you pull up there, there are some people you can see who hand a jacket out or who hand out a sandwich bag. And then there are others who scream at them, get a job, or who pull over in the furthest lane possible or as far to the painted line as they can get. So I want to talk about some of this. So what do they do with the money?
Well, of course, Rick, there's no one size fits all, right? And so the folks that I talk to may not be emblematic of, say, some of the folks in Harrisonburg or even some of the other folks in Charlottesville. So that I think should preface what I'm about to say, and that is that these folks use it to buy their supplies, buy their food, buy the stuff that they aren't given. Sometimes church groups and church going folk stop by and give them a packet of 10 socks, or some people put together survival kits, which are basically, gallon Ziploc bags filled with toothbrush, deodorant, soap, toilet paper, these sorts of things, which these folks that I spoke with cherish, and they take to wherever they need. And if they don't need it at that particular time, they know somebody that does. And that was one of the distinctions that they made about real homeless and the people that, as you said, go home at the end of the day, but go out because they have either a substance abuse problem or they're not able to work for one reason or the other, and they go out and fly a sign to raise money that way. But they have a home, whether it's a subsidized housing or whether it's something that was passed down through them generationally. I met folks that fall into both of those situations as well. And so, but the folks that are actually homeless, the distinction they make is that you don't deny anything that's ever given to you. You know, if you don't need it yourself, you know somebody that does. And that's a very important distinction, I think, because they use every resource that's given to them at these stoplights. And by and large, on these nights that drop down to the teens, they try to pool that money and get a room at one of the cheaper motels, the more inexpensive motels that are near these panhandling intersections and medians, so that they don't have to bear the actual winter elements. But I had the privilege of joining Stephen a couple of days ago to visit some other homeless folks in town, and they have, in fact, constructed a shelter, and they don't have the luxury of being able to go and frequent a hotel. And so I think it varies. And so what little money they get, they probably spend on food and warmth or materials that will warm them.
Let's go backwards then, because I think one of the questions that people always have is, how do I tell the difference? How do I tell the difference between somebody who is who needs what I'm willing to donate and someone who's ripping me off and who that's how they're making their living?
Well, I'll tell you two different answers. I guess first and foremost, I don't know. But two answers that really resounded perfectly with me. One was from Khaki Dimmick, who is she, Stephen, is she the head of TJAC?
Yeah, she's the executive director of the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless.
And she was at the Haven before.
Yeah, so technically the Haven is a program of TJAC. So I'm the director of the Haven, but TJAC is an umbrella organization that does represents lots of organizations.
And Khaki had mentioned to me, I posed that question to her as well, and she said, you know, it really doesn't matter. All that matters is what you think matters. And so if it makes you feel good as a person to give to somebody, then that's really what the takeaway is for you. If you need the assurance or the verification that they are actually homeless, that they are going to use what you give them and not sell it or not throw it away, then you need to have that conversation with them instead of having it in your own head. And that really made a lot of sense because if we look at all sorts of giving, it really is about coming back to you. That you, it makes you feel a certain way when you give, and that's why people, by and large, do give. And the other thing, so I pose that question to the folks that I talk to, the panhandlers that are homeless, and they gave me several answers. One of which was, if you're given something, you're going to use it, or you know somebody that will use it. The other is, look at who's out there on the most inclement weather of days. So if it's raining, sleeting, snowing, horrible 100-degree days, the real homeless need the money that they're going to get or the food or the supplies, and so they'll be out there. And that was another element. And the other is, look to see who's carrying 500 pounds of material on their back, in their backpack, because if you're homeless, you can't leave it somewhere. Unless you frequent a place like the Haven where they have storage lockers during the day, if you're out on these kind of the outstretches of the city near the county, then you're not going to be able to leave your stuff in the woods for fear of it being taken. And so they're going to cram everything they can that they need to survive in their backpacks at one point in time.
You also had your article, again, Jordy Yeager, who wrote an article, The Median Man, for Siva Weekly. You can find it, c-ville.com, The Median Man. There was a brief bit in your article, I believe, about a woman who actually had a conversation with one of these men. She followed him for a brief while, or, you know, not stalking sort of, but kept an eye on him for a while before she convinced herself that he truly was in need and not getting in his somewhat nice car and driving home where he had, you know, an HVAC system in the evening.
That's exactly right. Yes. No, she had seen the gentleman you're talking about is Michael, And he flies us on. He also has a litany of health issues that are very real and that he's seeking treatment for at UVA, but that are still ongoing and trouble him. In so much as he has a cast on one arm, he has a crutch under the other. He walks with a very severe limp and can only walk maybe 50 feet at a time before he has to stop and take a break. And so somebody that's passing by him sees that and says to themselves, oh, isn't that nice? He has a crutch as a prop. You know, that makes me, that's supposed to make me feel more pitiful or more giving or charitable. And so this particular woman saw that and continued to pass by. Maybe she was going to work every day and continued to pass by this intersection and eventually realized that he was not faking, that this was in fact his life. And this was the reality that he had to deal with every day. And so she stopped and she told him as much and said, look, I'm sorry that I judged you falsely in the beginning, but I had to see for my own well-being or for my own kind of peace of mind that this was, in fact, what you were dealing with. And he said, I understand. And he related the story to me that before he was homeless, he made some of the same presumptions himself of homeless people, that, you know, we have these conversations in our head that exist of what that person is doing. And one of those conversations, I think, is that they're trying to get one over on us. And that's not always necessarily the case. In fact, one of the other panhandlers, the sign flyers, thought that Michael, this guy with the crutch, was in fact faking as well. And sure enough, there have been other examples of that. One woman that they mentioned to me one day was without a crutch. Next day she had a crutch, and the next day she didn't have it. So who's to say? I didn't talk to that woman, and I don't know her name. But these are the stories that circulate out there on the media.
Jordy Yeager, again, a journalist who wrote an article, The Median Man, for Seaville Weekly, c-ville.com, if you want to read it. Stephen Hitchcock, also with us. He's director and chaplain at The Haven. Stephen, as director and chaplain, do you find that this is in any way makes your job difficult in terms of funding from the public in terms of getting those in need to come down to the Haven, because you've got those out there who who may make it, who are bringing judgment into the world?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess in one way it could, in the sense that you know, this is what people associate with homelessness, and if they associate homelessness with The Haven, they could make that association. But I think generally people see there are folks here in need, and we want to support the system of care that helps those people. I mean, some of the folks that fly a sign interact with the formal system of care. Some want to live a bit more off the grid and in that communal way that Jordy described. I haven't found that people having some sort of judgment, negative judgment on panhandling, ultimately reflects poorly on The Haven. I mean, there is this notion that because more people are panhandling, that The Haven or other resources and organizations are drawing people from out of town. But I mean, all you have to do is go to the next community and you'll hear them say the same thing. And the fact of the matter is more people are panhandling across our country. I don't think it's a surprise that people would do so, because Charlottesville is such an affluent community. I wish that they didn't, because I wish that they were more connected. I think it's right. I think it's true that a lot of these folks that panhandle outside of the ones that have these core groups are disconnected. And I would love to see them connected, and their outreach workers at The Haven and through Region 10 and on our own who do outreach. But part of it is also, you know, wanting to live somewhat off the grid.
Again, this is Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call here at WNRN. That was Stephen Hitchcock from The Haven here in Charlottesville. Jordy Yeager here with us as well, a journalist who wrote an article about panhandling.
And Rick, one thing that I might add, and Jordy and I, as he mentioned, we went out for this point in time count, which is the annual census, who's homeless. And when I say who's homeless, it means those who are unsheltered, but also those who are in shelters. So who, but for this intervention, would be on the street. So we administered that count a couple of days ago. And Jordy made an interesting observation, because I often am talking to volunteers who are coming to the Haven and want to know, what do you do when you come across someone who's flying a sign? And I think it's a bit more intuitive when you're walking past someone on the corner or the downtown mall. Whether or not you choose to give them money, I think you look them in the face and regard them as a human being. This is a group of folks that get seen and not really seen all day long. And that, to me, that matters. That speaks to the character of our community, if we look the people who are in need in the face. But when you're in a car, it's a really discreet and speedy encounter. And I thought Jordy made an interesting comment about people's faces. Not to put you on the spot, Jordy, but I think that would be worth hearing. The last thing that I'll say is, in terms of knowing whether someone's going to use your money properly, I mean, that's an issue no matter the sector, no matter the stage of life. I mean, we don't always know how people are going to use money. How do you judge if someone's good or bad?
Right. There are thousands of nonprofit organizations who, once you dig deeply, you discover that the percentage of their funding is given to internal administration and not actually spent on the core that they claim to be spending it on.
Exactly. And it's just not the nonprofit world, but the for-profit world. I mean, how people use a gift will always and forever be an issue. So whether or not you want to sort of circumscribe your gift, that's something you need to sort through. But folks, it's complicated. It's gray in terms of the motivations there and the uses that they make of the gifts that they're given. But I thought it was interesting, Jordy, your comments about that very discreet encounter and in particular someone's countenance.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's a good point. The one thing that I came to understand from even standing on the median with some of these folks is that when people are in their cars, that's their personal space. That's their confines, and anything that comes close to their car is viewed as maybe a threat.
You're breaking into my aura.
Exactly. And so as a result, when you're confronted with somebody 2, 3, even 10 feet away from you at a stoplight, standing on the median, even if they're not making eye contact. In fact, several of the panhandlers I talk to intentionally don't make eye contact with folks. They just stare straight ahead or stare down because they don't want to appear threatening or intimidate somebody. You know, they know that they're being looked at, they're being judged, engaged, and so they don't want to play into that by seeming scary. And they know these things, and so they take certain tactics, but that's another story. And so what I realized from the driver's side of things is that people really don't have to put on any social masks or the social graces that we do when we go to the grocery store or we interact with anybody in customer service or when we interact with a person we know on the street or may just have an acquaintance with. All of those social graces go out the window. And what is left is that raw interaction. And so as you I think hinted at, is some people scream at these folks, you know, they say get a job, or they curse at them, or they lambast them for a variety of reasons. Other people are very charitable and giving. Other people are scared, intimidated, you know, they go into the furthest lane away from the median. They roll up their windows, they don't make eye contact, they pretend to be on the phone. They do a whole host of things. So whatever, and the theory that I've come to believe, expressed to me by the Panhandlers, is that that's their true nature. Whatever your true nature, or at least in that moment, whatever that is going to be expressed and going to be reflected in how you are as a driver when you come. And so in a way, these Panhandlers see a side of society that is very honest, is very real, and yet they surprisingly don't remain cynical. You know, they are optimistic, and so they deal with the saints and the a-holes, as I refer to.
11:37 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest today, Stephen Hitchcock and Jordy Yeager. Come back. I want to talk about the legality a little bit of what's happening. Hang tight.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
Montfair Resort Farm, inviting you to escape to the Blue Ridge Mountains. With cabins and events lodged for groups, Montfair Resort Farm is the destination for your next vacation, wedding, or company retreat with wine tours, horseback riding, and an in-house masseuse, 30 minutes from Charlottesville. MontfairResortFarm.com is just one click away.
Route 11 Potato Chips, celebrating 20 years of making all-natural, kettle-cooked potato chips in Mount Jackson, Virginia. Route 11 Potato Chips offers flavors like Chesapeake Crab and Dill Pickle, all cooked in sunflower oil in an environmentally friendly facility. Information for retail outlets and fry viewings is at rt11.com.
The Modlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond presenting the adventures of Alvin Sputnik, Deep Sea Explorer, a one-man micro-epic puppet show featuring puppetry, live and recorded music, and animation to present an exploration of the deep blue sea, February 12th through 15th. Details at modlin.richmond.edu.
Hello, I'm Marilyn Wright from the Fralin Museum of Art at the University of Virginia. This winter, we present three new exhibitions. You can experience our presentation of Lucian Freud's etchings. Lucian Freud is an artist of the post-war period and the grandson of Sigmund Freud. Also, we present Albrecht Dürer, Etchings and Figures for the Soul. You could also view A Portrait of the Artist, 1525 to 1825. This exhibition presents a selection of prints from the collection of the Sarah Campbell Blaffer Foundation, dating from the 16th to the early 19th centuries. For details on these exhibits and other museum events, virginia.edu/artmuseum. I'm Marilyn Wright, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today, talking about homelessness, talking about panhandling or flying a sign, as we've learned that it's called, thanks to Jordy Yeager, journalist who wrote The Median Man. You can now find that at c-ville.com. And learning more about actual homelessness from Stephen Hitchcock, director and chaplain at The Haven. Stephen, before we get into... I want to learn a little bit about the legality of it. One of the things that I got from Jordy's article was from one of the people that he talks to is that the difficulties that he has now is because he's lost his paperwork. His identity was stolen or something of that type. Mm-hmm. And so since 9/11, he can't just go and get a new ID, et cetera. Being homeless, how much of 9/11 contributes to that? Or is that just, you know, part of the reason?
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit sort of unique to that individual. But so I'm not sure how much 9/11 really weighs on the issue. It's more that when you're living out, it's difficult to keep track of things. When you're living on the street, when you're living in the woods, someone could come through, you're having to carry everything with you, and so it's hard to hold on to your documentation. There are several programs, organizations that help you get your documentation. So while it can be difficult tracking down someone's birth certificate or like high school records, it can be done. And there are workers at the Haven. There are workers through On Our Own, through Region 10, through OAR that can help you do that.
But one of the things that one of the reasons that these folks carry all their items with them is because it may be stolen from them, and there's only so much you can do about it because what you're doing is illegal. Talk about the legality of, or the illegality of, flying the sign.
Sure. Well, yeah, it varies, and especially when we're talking Charlottesville, Alamo area, it varies where you're able to do it. Initially, they prohibited it and banned it with an ordinance in the city, and so the folks moved out to the county, Rio Road and Pantops and places out there, and then county administrators began to get some pretty heavy complaints from folks that they were being panhandlers being aggressive, that they were feeling frightened and intimidated when they're sitting at the stoplights. And
are those guys, we used to see the guys with the fire boots. Yeah. Were those true panhandlers or?
Well, were they the
fake panhandlers or what?
Right. No, that's a good question. That is a type of panhandling, and that actually got wrapped into this whole discussion around where is it legal, what are they trying to prohibit, because fire department goes out and asks for money, and those are legitimate firemen or volunteers with the fire department that do use that money, we presume, to fund fire operations and that sort of thing. But as do other groups, church groups, Boy Scout troops, Salvation Army, all of these folks are considered under the definition panhandling. So when these ordinances were passed, there was that question of, okay, are they going after the fire department, or are they going after the homelessness that is viewed by some to be a blight on our society, or, you know, an infringement on our rights to sit peaceably at our stoplight with no homelessness in sight. And so then there entered a lawsuit that was filed through the local chapter of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, that is continuing to fight that through a number of appeal process. I won't go into the details of that, but it's a good question of, is it your First Amendment right to express yourself in a public setting with words on a sign, even if those words don't ask for money? So a lot of the panhandlers that I spoke with for this article don't have explicit instructions for anybody to give them money. They say things like anything will help or down on our luck, you know, and explain their own situation. But they don't explicitly ask for money.
And then there's the one gentleman who, gosh, I wish I'd taken his note, but it was more of a, he wasn't given a psalm from the Bible, but it was something more similar to that. He wasn't even, it was his phrase for the day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's Mike. He comes up with what he calls statement signs sometimes, and they're more observations on our place in society than they are, you know, anything else. And so I think one, I stopped by and saw him a couple weeks ago, and he said he was flying a sign a couple days prior to that, that said something like, it's colder out here, it's about as cold out here as most people's hearts. And he said he was having a bad day that day. But some days they're uplifting signs, and some days they're not.
But is it, you know, I think for those of us who live in the Charlottesville Albemarle area, and I recognize that WNRN reaches many other regions, and I know that there are those flying a sign in many of these other areas. Is it legal, illegal in Charlottesville and Albemarle?
It is illegal in Albemarle. It is technically legal to fly a sign in Charlottesville. What's illegal in Charlottesville is walking in the middle of highways or bypasses. You can stand on that median, but getting to and from that median is another question of legality altogether. So, when asked about this, our chief of police here, Chief Longo, was asked about this by another journalist in town named Coy Barefoot, last year, and he said, well, it comes down to manpower. We don't have the resources to go and get every panhandler off the median and charge them with a petty charge, really, when it comes down to it, as far as sentencing, as far as what the effect will have on them. There are other things, like if they're in front of a store, a bank, on a public bus or a mode of transportation. These are things that if they are complained about, and the cops can enforce more easily, and often do. And so a lot of times on the downtown mall, if somebody's being disruptive or drunk or in front of an ATM asking for money, they'll be talked to very quickly by an authority figure.
11:47 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about homelessness. Stephen Hitchcock, Jordy Yeager. Stephen is the director and chaplain at the Haven. We know that Charlottesville, the city itself, seems to be doing a lot, at least financially, to offer aid in terms of homeless.
Yeah.
I don't know if what I have here is correct. $150,000 approved for the crossings.
That's right.
And $105,000 for something called the Housing Initiative.
Oh, actually, for something called Spring for Housing, and that's this endeavor to try to house as many people as possible by the end of Pochum. So I mentioned Pochum, which is the thermal last resort shelter, and it ends around April 1, end of March. And instead of exiting people onto the street, we're really hoping to work together as a whole system of care to exit people into housing this year. So that's what that Spring for Housing is. And the Crossings is it's run by Virginia Supportive Housing, which is an organization out of Richmond, and they specifically build and run these permanent supportive housing initiatives like the Crossings. And so that $150,000
is... Not everybody knows what the Crossings are.
Sorry, it's the Crossings at 4th and Preston. So it's right across from the Preston Bodos, right across those old railroad tracks there. And it is what's called permanent supportive housing. It's a 60-room unit, 30 of which are set aside for what we would, you know, refer to as usually more chronically homeless individuals with a lot of high needs and barriers to housing, and then 30 are more low income, though there is some flux there. But this $150,000 is meant to designate five more of those permanent supportive beds. So that's beds for people with lots of barriers and who need case management, ongoing case management.
And what is this money going to do? I mean, are we going to build more units at the crossing? $150,000.
No. It's to subsidize those units. So 30 of the units, as I mentioned, are for this more chronically homeless and are heavily subsidized. So they have a case manager that's meeting with them, trying to hook them into different mainstream community resources that they've been disconnected from for a long time. So but that takes resources. And so it's to subsidize those five beds.
Again, 11:50 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about homelessness. Stephen, do you think... You talked about trying to get people in, trying to help people who are enduring homelessness. I don't know if we can say suffering. I don't like to say suffering. Is that true? Would you use the word?
Well, I mean, I think it can be a form of trauma for sure.
And trying to, in other instances, trying to help before they're actually reached the point of homelessness.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you end homelessness?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people speak that way because people like to hear that, ending homelessness. But
it's like polio. Can we give everybody a shot so that we can stop homelessness?
No, I don't think that we can. In fact, I know that we can't. But I do think that we can become a system of care that makes, and this is sort of the mantra that you now hear in high functioning, like nationally across systems of care, make homelessness rare, brief, and non-recurring. And I think we can build a system that does that, so that The people who don't ever need to become homeless don't. The people who are homeless, we can get through quickly and help stabilize so that they don't have to return to homelessness. And I mean, honestly, Rick, I'm encouraged in the 5 years. So the Haven just celebrated its 5 year anniversary. I've seen a lot of really positive change in terms of not just the Haven, but lots of organizations working together for the sake of the client, not just doing their own programming and getting theirs in these silos, actually working together for the sake of the client. And so I have to say I'm hopeful in a way that I haven't been in years past.
That's Stephen Hitchcock. He is the director and chaplain at The Haven. You mentioned briefly about the point in time survey. Do we have any numbers from that?
Yeah, so I talked with Jordy just before we came on the air, and there are no formal numbers yet. So it's really two different. So there's the point in time count is required. It's federally mandated that every system of care administer this count. So we count who is homeless on the night of January 28th. And that's not.
Why is that date picked?
Well, I mean, it's arbitrary to a certain
just
extent.
Some,
it's late
some
January.
Random cold day.
Yeah. So across the nation, it's not always on the 28th, but in late January, this is happening. So we're counting the people who are homeless. Locally, we also provide a survey to try to garner what that person's needs are and what's holding them back from taking the next step forward. So and I think it's important for people to know, according to the federal definition of homelessness, what is homeless or who are the homeless? It is those who are living in places not meant for human habitation, like a car or like outside, but also those who are in shelters and are in an initiative that but for that intervention, they would be homeless. So the homeless, it's an expansive definition, honestly. So we're counting everyone who are in shelters and then everyone who is unsheltered on the night of the 28th.
Do we have any numbers from last year then, if we don't have numbers from
and
this year?
I should say anecdotally what I said to Jordy was it looks to me like, at least from the unsheltered side, because that's what Jordy and I were up to, is counting those who were living out and not accessing the shelters on that night. It looks like it's going to be in the mid-teens in terms of who's unsheltered. Last year it was more like the mid-20s, but it's hard to say for sure right now. That's anecdotal, but that's my sense of it.
Do you have people who run away from you rather than be counted because they'd rather not participate because they don't know who you are, because they're pulling away from society, or you know, because they you're not their friend?
Yeah, that's a good question. Generally, no. It's up to that person whether or not they want to take the survey, so they don't have to. But the fact of the matter is, most of the people who are going out into camps would be of the sort like Jordy or myself. Charlottesville is a small enough city to where we pretty much know all of the folks that are out there, and so the handful of folks that we interviewed welcomed us really warmly and jovially, and it was honestly a great interaction.
And I will say that as far as Stephen is concerned, I mean, they are very, very appreciative of the services that the Haven offers, even if they don't partake of them every single day. They know they exist, and they know they're there for them if they do need them.
Just about 4 minutes left, 11:56 on the wake-up call with Jordy Yeager and Stephen Hitchcock. So this was City of Charlottesville only. So if someone was just past the end of East Market Street?
No. It's so our region, the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless, is the lead agency for our region, and it involves the surrounding counties.
Okay, so Green and Fluvanna and all that area.
Yeah, so Green, Nelson, Fluvanna, Louisa, and Albemarle. Those are the five counties in our region. And I think I can anticipate your next question. No, we did not go into those counties. We're working with whether it's the school system or just interpersonally through different churches or through the departments of social service in order to try to get a sense of who is homeless and what their needs are and how we might be of support. But it's not a perfect census in that regard.
Just a few minutes left. And Jordy, I want to go back, and I realize I haven't left you a lot of time to answer some of these. Some of the questions that you started your article with, again, the Median Men, c-ville.com. Are they drug addicts?
The folks that I talk to, no. There are some drug addicts that do exist out there.
How much money do they make?
It varies every day. They could make as little as $1 to $6 to as much. I mean, I've heard numerous stories of folks stopping and giving them $5, $20 bills. $100 days is a rarity, but it does exist.
Why don't they get a job?
Again, a variety of reasons. Some are physically disabled, and so they cannot actually do physical work. Some, as Stephen mentioned, they don't have paperwork, and they need help in getting the paperwork. Some, and this is a really, really key important point, and I'm glad you brought it up, is that it's a matter of choice for them to be able to decide what to do with their money. And so they would love to get a job, whether it's raking leaves, cleaning gutters, shoveling snow in the winter. But as long as they don't have an official job, this is their job. And so rather than relying on the services that are offered in town, this is their choice. And they want to be able to decide what to do with their money.
Are they violent?
No. Granted, I'm a man and quite tall, and so I don't have necessarily the intimidating presence of somebody that's smaller. I was never scared for my life. I was never fearful. I had the sense from them that if anything were to go wrong with anybody, if a car were to get into an accident, if one of the drug addict folks panhandling were to attack somebody else that was panhandling, these folks would come to their defense and come to their rescue.
And I would just add that statistically, just from the statistical side of things, far more crimes are meted out against the homeless than actually perpetrated by. And that's because they're exposed. They're vulnerable. It's not exactly like someone sleeping out in the cold weather is not exactly coming from a position of power. And so more often you have crimes that are actually being committed against the homeless.
It's true. They've had bottles thrown at them. Yes.
Nice. All right. That's Jordy Yeager. Again, he's a journalist. His article, The Median Man, you can find it online now, c-ville.com. Stephen Hitchcock, director and chaplain at The Haven. We'll put this up on the podcast, but Stephen, a push. How do people find The Haven if they want to donate or check more into it or call up?
Sure. So you can find us at thehaven.org. You can also just come down to 112 West Market Street. We are open to all and would love for you to tour what is a beautiful, renovated, historic church for the purpose of being this day shelter. So we'd love for you to help out in any way possible.
And WNRN.org or cvillepodcast.com. Check out the podcast. Next week, we'll be talking about toxins being transported across the country in an old fashion. Maybe we need to modernize that way. Thanks, gentlemen, for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong
and Max Cecilia Struther.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.